We're most of the way through March Madness. Two of the four teams have made it on to the final four, and the other two will be determined this afternoon. We have just in the recent past gone by the Daytona 500 in the Super Bowl. We look ahead not too far to the Summer Olympics. And within our culture, we have very much this fascination with physical prowess demonstrated in athletics. Today we're going to be looking at Job chapter 4, and as we do, we see a little bit different scenario that rather than looking to the physical for someone to demonstrate their prowess, they looked to the intellectual. For these people, 3,500 years ago, thought it was a little primitive to base things on the physical. And so we had this scene in which there would be this great discussion, and there would be those that would be seated such that they would be having this ongoing discussion from day to day. And it would draw a crowd, and everyone would come along to hear what they would say. And this is probably very much the scene in which Job and his three friends had gathered together to contemplate the situation that Job found him in. Please join me in Job chapter 4 as we're going to be taking a look at the problem with calamity. Now, as we come to this, the first thing I want us to see here in verses 1 through 4 is a magnificent model. Reading in Job chapter 4. Then Eliphaz, the Temanite, replied, "If someone ventures a word with you, will you be impatient? But who can keep from speaking? Think of how you instructed many, how you have strengthened feeble hands. Your words have supported those who stumbled. You have strengthened faltering knees." Job is put forth as this good man, this really, really good man, whose life was such a shining example, and whose words had been used by many for strength. And we can see that as Job is being portrayed as this great guy of being this tower of strength and wisdom to everyone around him, it makes us think of us as Christians. How that we also have been given this idea we are to be a great testimony. We are to be people of integrity, that what we say is what we mean, because that is in fact what we are going to do. That there should be a certain expectation that what people hear us say is what they're going to see in how we live. And so is what they expect from us is what we will deliver. It's interesting in these verses how that Eliphaz comes along and he very politely is asking permission to speak, even though you know he's going to say what he has to say anyway. Number two, unrelated advice. I'm sorry, faithless facade, verses 5 through 11. Verses 5 and 6. Just jumping ahead there, just so you know what was coming next. "But now trouble comes to you, and you are discouraged. It strikes you, and you are dismayed. Should not your piety be your confidence, and your blameless ways your hope?" We have this picture in which Eliphaz is attacking Job and saying, "Hey, you were able to give all of this wonderful advice to others and be this pillar of strength in your life when things were going good. Why can't you take your own advice now?" we've all been tempted to throw in back at somebody who's joyful all the time when we happen to find them at that moment that they're hurting and not so joyful. That you remember hearing from them something that goes something like this. Philippians 4:4, rejoice in the Lord again, and I say rejoice. Well, where's that verse for you now? Before we get too hard on Job here, it sounds perfectly logical. It sounds perfectly legitimate that Eliphaz is speaking the truth. It's like, come on, Job, if you've got these answers for life, why don't they work for you now? Sounds reasonable. But I think we need to pause for just a moment and understand that the situation that Job was looking at was not necessarily this, I got a flat tire on the way to work when I had an important appointment awaiting me. No, Job had one of these situations in which everything was lost. Economically, he was crushed. His home destroyed. And he had to go to every single one of his children's funerals all at the same time. Before we put any credence to what Eliphaz is saying to Job, we need to realize it is only legitimate that Job would have these questions. That everything went wrong, dreadfully wrong, all at the same time. I would understand if Job had one thing go wrong and he was pouting. And I think Eliphaz would have some credence in what he was putting forth. But Job lost everything. And in losing everything, Job certainly was not in a category with anybody else. And basically what we see here is that Eliphaz is wanting to commit to Job, hey, this trouble had to come on you for a reason. Some way or other, you have offended God. Notice verses 7 through 11. Consider now, who being innocent has ever perished? Where were the upright ever destroyed? As I have observed, those who plow evil and from those who sow trouble reap it. At the breath of God, they are destroyed. At the blast of his anger, they perish. The lions may roar and growl, yet the teeth of the great lions are broken. The lion perishes for lack of prey, and the colts of the lion and the cubs of the lioness are scattered. You get this idea here that Eliphaz is putting forth, you reap what you sow. What you have sown is what you are going to reap. And we understand that he's probably speaking somewhat as, I'm coming from the voice of experience. And this is the truth I'm now going to lay on you. Well, as a principle, we all know it is true. You reap what you sow. And yet we also know that is not a guarantee. Because every day we are met with the disasters, the calamities in life that fall upon the innocent as well as the wicked. And it has no consequence. Though the general principle is still true, that you do, in fact, reap what you sow. It's not a guarantee. And so Eliphaz is very much being judgmental to Job and telling him, you're in this trouble because trouble has come to you. It's very clear that Eliphaz is passing judgment on Job. It's just like, the reason you're in a worse mess than I am is because even though you had everything looking hunky-dory fine, obviously there was some wickedness in you because I've still got my stuff. And so Eliphaz was not being very kind to Job. Now, if in fact this was true, what he was saying is that, you know, Eliphaz is saying what you reap is sow, then for faithful Christians, we would never, ever have a flat tire on the way to church or in need of a car repair when we were going out for ministry. Because God knows we were doing good and he's going to give us a free pass. If that was the case, we wouldn't even need to put gas in our tank, would we? Because God is going to supersede for us. Eliphaz, you're incorrect. So the principle, of course, is still true, but it is not guaranteed. And yet in this day, we still struggle with that difficult question, why do the righteous suffer? And why do the wicked prosper? It is within this that God has given us this ancient text that we can consider. I love the way that Eliphaz uses the example of the lion. The lion, the great and terrible king of the jungle. And within this lion, it says that even the lion can have his teeth broken. And the analogy here is that he can't even hunt the prey that is out there. He can't catch his prey. That some way he's become decrepit and unable to go. Eliphaz's idea here is that the lion that can be destroyed and left to perish from starvation deserves it. Because the lion has put problems on people. His point is, with the illustration, just as the lions have suffered because of the problems they have put on people, so then is Job now suffering. Point number three, unrelated advice, verses 12 through 21. Let us read verses 12 through 16. Oh, a word was secretly brought to me. My ears caught a whisper of it. Amid disquieting dreams in the night, when deep sleep falls in them, fear and trembling seized me and made all my bones shake. A spirit glided past my face, and the hair on my body stood on end. It stopped, but I could not tell what it was. A form stood before my eyes, and I heard a hushed voice. Now, like I said, there was a crowd. I mean, this was the Jeopardy Super Bowl right here. And Eliphaz is talking away, and all of a sudden, in front of this crowd, Eliphaz breaks into a whisper because he wants the people to just anticipate how he's going to amaze them. And so Eliphaz captures it in terms of a vision in which what I'm going to say next from this vision is going to be new and profound. You're going to be amazed. So Eliphaz has set the stage very carefully on the very thing that he's going to say next. And so here we go, verse 17, in which he lays this amazement on them. Can a mortal be more righteous than God? Can a man be more pure than his maker? You know, the people had to be going, what? Is this really what you got? Is this really what you're bringing to us? Is this sad excuse for some profound mystery? What you're really going to give us? Eliphaz says, no man is greater than God. By a show of hands, here this morning, does anyone find that particularly profound? Thank you. And neither would have they. This is something everybody's going to be going, duh. God is greater than man. There is no one greater than God, so that man must get in line with God. And you know, it's interesting here, because as Eliphaz has gone to such great lengths to set this up, that he's going to be spewing out these words of wisdom, it suddenly comes off as, you ain't telling us anything new. You aren't adding to this conversation. You aren't bringing any truth that is going to be impacting within this. And of course, Eliphaz is sitting here looking at how his words are going to be impacting Job's situation. Eliphaz is speaking as the voice of experience, and is typical of the voice of experience. They're giving far too much advice. Within this, then, we certainly know that the excess truth that Eliphaz is sharing, though it's true, is not helpful. Picture for a moment, if you would, a small child climbing a tree recklessly in the park. As the parent sits dutifully by and knows that, hey, we're headed for disaster here. I've told you before, don't do that. So the parent, just out of respect for everyone else in the park, just happens to yell out, Johnny, you get down out of that tree. If you fall down and you break your leg, don't you come running to me. As one would expect, the child falls, is writhing in pain. Can you picture any of us sitting on that bench as Johnny is there underneath the tree? And we come back with, see? Told you so. I think that this is a picture that we can get with what Eliphaz is attempting to do with the situation of addressing Job. He's telling Job, come on now, look at all this experiential wisdom I can share on you. Most of which what Eliphaz is saying is true. But it has absolutely nothing to do with Job's situation. It's excess verbiage. Though it is true, it's not pertinent to the discussion at hand. Unfortunately, we all pick up on the fact of where Scott's going with this. And just before I go any further, just so everybody knows, being a man of many words, I'm talking to myself before I'm talking to any of you. Okay, as we see this, then we know that what this passage seems to be indicating is that when people are hurting, they do not need truth. When people are hurting, they need truth. that helps alleviate the hurt. So what I'm saying is that I believe we're getting out of this text here in front of us is don't be like Eliphaz. Don't be willing to share your truth, but rather share the truth that's going to reduce the hurt. It's back to our child. You know, he does not need advice on staying out of trees or not recklessly climbing them. The child right then and there does not need to know what they should not have done. As a believer that falls, the last thing they need is another believer coming up beside them and telling them what they shouldn't have done. As they feel the sting and pain of what sin has caused in their life, do you really think they need us to remind them yet again? Like the child that is not needing that kind of truth input. Like the child who is needing to hear, I love you, let me comfort you, and let me take you to the hospital for medical attention. We can see that this can relate directly from what Eliphaz was doing to what we sometimes have a tendency to do. All of us face calamity, disaster, any sort of tragedy. Why? Because it is absolutely part of the human experience. And as we were looking at these things, there's things that I believe we can do to help equip ourselves to be effective instruments of love when it happens. Number one, calamity calls for compassion. We've got to recognize in the midst of a disaster, and it does not matter whether it is small or whether it is large. If the person to whom it has camped upon views it as a disaster, that's good enough. Now we can see within this that compassion is necessary. When somebody is in the midst of the disaster, it is not time to organize our thoughts on how we can share with them truth. Yes, the very words that we may have to say may in fact be true, may in fact be the answer that would have kept them out of disaster. We must understand disaster, calamity causes hurt. Hurt impairs our hearing. We will be unable to give the truth that is needed for any impact whatsoever until the hurt is reduced. We need to be there. We need to care. We need to comfort. We need to encourage. We need to pray. And we need, through our life and our actions, deliver the truth as needed. Save the words. Secondly, a warning to the voice of experience. Be quiet. Yes. Yeah, if they'd only listen to us, they wouldn't be in this trouble. To remind them of that is not going to be beneficial. in the midst of difficulty, in the midst of disaster, we need to understand that we need to help. And our help is typically not with words. Help, as it is required, the truth that is needed is whatever it is that is going to reduce the hurt. And that can only come from a heart of compassion and love. It may be the time for the voice of experience to impart important, wise words. But I implore you, tread carefully when hurt is found. Number three, delivery matters. Within our help, may we seek to avoid any sarcastic dig that would somehow point out the ignorance, the foolishness that got them into this place anyway. Because it would not matter how incredibly subtle that this would be, it is not going to be helpful. So within our delivery, may our words always be those that would be found to be salve for the wound, a brace for the broken, life for those that are experiencing the loss that we see through death, comfort for those who feel crushed spiritually, peace for those in the midst of turmoil, and strength for those who do not feel it exists. We need to demonstrate love in the midst of the calamity. Listen carefully. I believe most of us at one time or another have been Eliphaz to somebody else. I ask you to commit before the Lord, never risk again being the unfortunate friend like Eliphaz. Father, we thank you for the challenges that you give us throughout your book. Lord, we could take a passage out of Job today and ask that your spirit has been with us, convincing us of those things, that we would not be misguided in our sharing of truth, but that it would always be for the goal of building others up. Lord, may we wrestle with the truth before us, that we would be the compassionate, loving people, that people know this is a secure place to hang out. Be with our hearts as we prepare for communion. In Christ's name.